Absolutely. Well, that's going to be the main event of Ric Flair's last match, and it's time now for the main event here of day one of the StarCast panels. That, of course, 30 years with Bret Hart as we celebrate the anniversary of SummerSlam 1992. Kenny, Bret, it's all go time for you guys. Let's send it on over to them.
Good afternoon, StarCast! You guys having a good time? Okay, so I don't want to take too much time. You want to meet Bret Hart, right? You want to see the man himself. Before we start, I do just want to address the elephant in the room. I do have a Scottish accent.
Yes!
One person likes it, but I'm going to maybe try and do a bit of a Drew McIntyre. So it's more tolerable, but you will be able to hear me. This is all about Bret. In the UK, SummerSlam 92 is like our WrestleMania 3. I mean, the shit we had to deal with afterwards, Rebellion, Mayhem in Manchester, we hold SummerSlam 92 very high. And there's a reason that Dax Harwood always talks about Bret Hart. There's a reason CM Punk gives you nods to Bret's matches. It's because his work still holds up today. Even earlier over there, my friend David McCutcheon took his wife Val and his kid Sylvia to meet Bret, and as soon as Bret seen the kid, he wanted a hug. He's a pro through and through, and it's time for us to give back to Bret with this celebration of that match from SummerSlam 92. So ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the two-time WWF Tag Team Champion, two-time IC, two-time WCW Champion, two-time Hall of Famer, and five-time WWE Champion, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart! Bret, 30 years since SummerSlam 92.
Hard to believe, 30 years. But that was a very special year, 92.
Well, before we get to SummerSlam 92, you know, the UK market started to get big in 1989. You were on the first UK show against Dino Bravo. When did you kind of get the feeling that the UK was starting to become a hot market for WWF?
I knew right away. Before they ever even got there, I was like, once American wrestling hits Britain, British wrestling will be out of business. Because British wrestling was just so lousy compared to American wrestling. I mean, there was a lot of great wrestlers and a lot of different wrestling, like in countries in like Japan or England or the United States. There's great wrestlers and there's lots of shit wrestlers. And unfortunately, in England, a lot of them were little tiny skinny guys that weren't very big. And a lot of the guys that were like Big Daddy was the opposite of Hulk Hogan on steroids. He was like the Hulk Hogan on pure fat. And but anyway, you know, you get great wrestlers in different styles and stuff. But I knew from the get-go, as soon as WWF went there, that's the kind of wrestling and that would just totally grip English wrestling fans and completely push that British wrestling off to the side, which is kind of a shame because British wrestling had an art to itself and they had a lot of great, great wrestlers and they still do. There's some, maybe fair to say now that they're turning out some of the best wrestlers in the world.
Well, I mean, in 1990, the Bulldog came back to WWF. He'd left, and he came back as a single star. Did you have anything to do with Davey Boy coming back in 1990?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know he was going to come back. It was very sudden. I didn't want to see him leave WWF at the time. But he got into trouble with his drug testing with the... whatever he was on, and got kicked out, and there wasn't much I could do about that. And it only seemed like a few months later, or maybe 6 months later, I don't know, Davey got suspended in maybe, was it October of 92 or 90, November of 92. And then he came back, I don't know, was it 93, 94, somewhere in there. But he was only in WCW. He could only take WCW for 1 year, and then he fled there and came back to WWF. And so it was a bit of a surprise when Davey showed up again. But I was, you know, me and Davey were always pretty good friends, so I was always, and of course he's family, so, you know, I always tried to look out for Davey.
Well, so WrestleMania 8 happens, you win the Intercontinental Championship from Rowdy Roddy Piper, and then it's going to be you and Sean at SummerSlam. That's the plan in Washington, D.C., SummerSlam 92, you and Sean. And then in June, things change. Talk to us about how that changed and it became you and Bulldog at Wembley.
Well, I was lucky. like when I won the title from Roddy Piper, the way they told me, they said it was only a penciled in kind of thing. Like, we're thinking, you know, all this stuff is thought out months and months in advance kind of thing. So it was the first time I heard, like when I won the title, they said, we're thinking that maybe we'll have you drop the belt eventually meaning anytime, to Sean, and asked me if I was okay with that. And I said I was totally fine with that because Sean was a great wrestler. And I was a big fan of Sean, and we were close friends at that time. So I wanted to work with Sean, and that was sort of roughly keyed in. Like, I didn't know. I knew I was going to hold the belt for a little longer. Like, I figured 6 months was my guess. And so I figured probably roughly 6 months from now, I'd probably drop the belt to Sean, like as planned. But then Jim Duggan and Kurt Hennig used to do the play-by-play, the announcing, and they get clued into everything ahead of time than the wrestlers do. And so I remember Duggan and Kurt both came up to me, not at the same time, but in the same day, to tell me that they're looking over their shoulders like this, like, guess what? You know, WrestleMania or SummerSlam is going to be in, they're thinking about having it in Wembley Stadium in England. And then I was thinking, me and Sean at Wembley Stadium would be a good match. It really would have been a great match. But the match to have in England would be Bret Hart versus British Bulldog. And he just came back. And so I stepped out on a limb kind of thing to go to Vince and prematurely and go, Vince, rumor has it that you're going to England and you're going to have a show in Wembley. And I said, I don't know if that's true or not, but if it's true, and if you were thinking that maybe you'd have maybe worked with Sean and dropped the belt to Sean in England, I said, I think that's a lousy idea. And I think you should have me drop it to the British Bulldog in England and let the British Bulldog drop the belt to Sean in a shorter run for Davey, but he would maybe, you know, work a program with Sean. Because I didn't want to interrupt Sean's chance of getting the belt. You know, wrestlers wait all their lives to get that moment. And for me to, you know, substitute Davey in Sean's place was a kind of not a fair thing to do. So I did go to Sean and tell him that. I said, Sean, I just want you to know, I went to Vince, and I said, I don't know if they really expect me to have plans for me to wrestle you at Wembley, but if they do, I'm suggesting this instead. And I remember Sean goes, I'm okay. Like, he was basically, I think Sean trusted me enough to know that I was trying to look after him and the business at the same time. And so anyway, when I did see Vince, he said he didn't have it worked out yet, whether it was going to be Wembley or Washington, D.C. And I told Vince, I said, Wembley with Davey would be great. And if you want to do Washington, D.C. at the MCI, I think it was called, either that or it was at the Cap Center. But I said, you got to put me with Sean in a ladder match. And he goes, what's a ladder match? And I said, a ladder match, it's a match we do in Calgary. And I tried to explain it to him. And he told me, he goes, show me the match. I want to see it tonight. So they went and got a bunch of guys to go out and get a big ladder and all this stuff. And it was all very spur of the moment. I only had a few minutes to get ready. He goes, grab anybody you want and show me a ladder match. What, exactly what it is, the concept. And so I said, I'll pick Sean, because Sean would be the guy I would do it with in Washington. Anyways, this is all meaningless, because anyway, within a day or two, it turned out it's going to be Wembley. But the mistake I made was I had the ladder match with Sean at a TV taping, and Sean stole the idea, just stole it from me and used it a year later or 2 years later or whatever. And, you know, today they always attribute the ladder match and to Razor and Sean, and that was, it's always a bit of a soft spot for me. I get pissed off when I think of, you know, how they stole that idea from me. It should have been me and Owen in a ladder match instead of that cage match. But anyway, so tit for tat, I guess. Wembley, Vince comes up to me and tells me that's me and Davey at Wembley. And it's like, great. And I remember I told him, I said, this might be the greatest match of all time. I said, you're not going to be disappointed. And I remember when I saw him a few weeks before before SummerSlam, he told me that he was taking a chance, but he was going to put me on last. And I remember I told him, I said, nobody will follow us. You have to put us on last, because nobody will have a match after. Like, there'll be nothing left after my match. And he said, I hope so. And I remember me and Davey was in Binghamton, New York. We had a TV taping, and they booked Davey and I. This is probably 2 months from the SummerSlam, sometime in June anyway. And again, Davey had just come back from being suspended, and he was just back. And we had a dark match. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what a dark match is, but it's a match filmed mostly just for Prosperity or the Coliseum videos or something like that. But we had this dark match. And me and Davey just had the absolute worst match. We went out there and just had about 25 minutes of just messed up high spots and flubs. And Davey, you know, neither one of us was ready for the match. We didn't know we were having the match until that day. And anyway, just the timing and the all the stuff that you need to have a really great match, everything was just off that night. And I just remember walking through the curtain after the match in Binghamton, and Vince is standing there. He goes, it's going to get better, right? And I'm like, yeah, it'll get better, you know. And that was it. And then Davey came up with a staph infection, which I think I've always thought was baloney. He didn't have a staph infection. He had a drug addiction. And he just went home for the whole summer. He took the whole summer off. I don't know whether that's true or not. He may have had a staph infection. But let me put it this way. Davey had numerous staph infections over the 20 years that we wrestled together. And it seemed convenient that whenever he needed a little time off to get a break, he came up with a staph infection. And it was always, it always worked, I guess. So, but I never believed that he actually had a staph infection. But I was disappointed, because I called Davey. I know it's hard to understand sometimes, but I thought so hard about this match at Wembley. Like, when you watch the match at Wembley, I mean, I don't know how other wrestlers construct a match in their head, but I constructed the match from the tie-up to the next move, to the next move, to the next move, and vice versa, like what Davey would do to me. And all, I pieced it together first. I had like for the first 5 minutes of the match. And then within a couple of weeks, I had the first 15 minutes. And then it was 20 minutes. And then it was 25. And I pieced the whole match move for move, every single step of it, the match. And I kept calling Davey all summer and going, Davey, I got to talk to you about this match. Like, I've got this sort of idea in my head of how the match should go, and it's going to be the best match ever, and I need you to call me back. And Davey never called me back. This never, I don't know why he would just refuse to call me. I think he had the monkey on his back, and he was probably doing a lot of blow with Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and which is a shame, because they both were their worst enemies at the time, like to drag themselves through that. And Davey really let himself go all summer. And Jim Neidhart, they both had drug problems. And Davian has never called me for 2 months. He ducked me every single day. I call my sister every day and go, please tell Davy to call me. He's got to call me about the match. And he would never call me. And I started getting kind of annoyed as the day, it got within like 2 or 3 days of SummerSlam. And I still haven't heard from Davey. I called him even before I got on the plane. I still never heard from him. I got on the plane, flew to England. There's Davey standing in the dressing room at Wembley Stadium where we were there the day before where they filmed those interviews. You know, the one I talk about, Windsor Castle or something like that, some castle that, but I just remember it's like this was all taped, pre-taped the day before. And so when I got with Davey in the dressing room in Wembley, I was really mad at him. Like, what the hell? I said, why haven't you called me? Like, this is the biggest moment of your whole life. And I was the one that put you in the match. Like, this is supposed to be me and Sean, but I went to bat for you and got you. And this is the biggest moment of your career, and you don't call me? And I remember Davey almost broke down in tears and said, I'm fucked. I'm fucked. And he told me that he was in really in a bad state, and he'd been told me he had been doing lines with Jim Neidhart right up until he got on the plane, and that he was basically a mess. And he goes, I haven't wrestled for 2 months, my timing's off, I haven't worked out. And he was really scared and almost kind of panicked, and was like, and I was like, I actually kind of calmed him down. I said, Davey, we'll be fine. You just got to listen to me all the way through the match. Trust me, and I will carry you through this whole match, and we'll be fine. Just get a good night's sleep, and we'll make this work tomorrow. You know, just think positive right now. All that stuff, everything you've done, and the fact that you didn't call me is irrelevant. Let's focus on the task at hand kind of thing. And so Davey was good that way. He was like, I think he was really scared and knew that he'd flubbed a big moment in his career, and I think he knew that if there was anybody that could save him, it would be me. And that was the hardest part about that match, is I did most of the work for both of us.
Well, before we talk about the match and the build up to it, you know, they put the tickets on sale at Wembley, and it was like the record ticket sales, the fastest ticket sales in company history at that point. The first WWF pay-per-view with no Hulk Hogan match. Did you feel pressure about that, about it selling out 80,000 people, Vince taking a chance on you guys going in the main event, or were you that confident that you guys would be able to, you know, pull it off?
It's a good question. No, I was very confident. I don't know what it was. I think it was the pink tights, the sunglasses, the wet hair. I don't even know for sure, but before Wembley, I'd say about 1990 to through 91, without any question, and I don't mean it in an arrogant way, but I was the biggest star in Germany, or in England and Germany for sure, and all Europe. Huge response every night. Biggest response of the night when I walked through the curtain. The place would go crazy. In the hotel lobbies, in every single English city that we wrestled in, they would be like a stampede of kids and grown-ups that would just mob you for autographs. I always had the biggest mob and biggest crowd. And I knew in Wembley that me versus Bulldog would be, to an English wrestling fan, would be the greatest matchup. Like, it would really hit that. You know, the beauty to a great, great wrestling match is when you don't know who's going to win. You know, when you see a storyline in wrestling where you go, I don't know who's going to win, you know, Bret Hart or Stone Cold, or Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, or Bulldog versus Bret Hart in Wembley, like, who's going to win? What's the finish going to be? And when you think about it, you know, I think I always said that to Vince. I said, right up until match time, I mean, I think a lot of people really didn't even think that much about the match. But when you stop and think about it, it's like, who's going to win? Bret Hart or Davey Boy? I think that's when it was like British fans were like, that's what I want to see. I don't know who's going to win. Like, no one knows who's going to win. And that's when you have for a wrestler, that's when you can piece a match together that's just a beautiful movie, really. And I knew that nobody really could say for sure who was going to win this one. And So I knew that's the big question. Like, that'll weigh heavy on fans all the way through it. And I believe, and I think I'm true to say this, that I was more over in England than Davey was. I was that popular in England. And so I knew when I put the whole match together that, done right, this would be the best match ever. And the outcome would be, it would be heroic. Like, Davey would win. And, you know, I just knew, I said, this will be magic for both of us. Like, me losing in Wembley to Davey Boy will be fine. Like, that will, I'll be just as good the next day as I, like, it won't hurt me. And I knew that it would do great things for Davey. But I also knew that losing to Davey, I thought there would be a rebound effect, that people would feel bad that I lost and they feel bad that they cheered against me. And I knew that in America and, say, Canada, I was more over in those markets than Davey was. So a lot of people would be disappointed that I lost the title. But at the same time, the English fans would be so happy because they love their British wrestlers, as they should, and they were going to love the fact that Davey beat me. But I knew that a week later they'd kind of feel bad that they actually, deep down inside, kind of liked me better than Davey and wished that maybe we'd both be champions or something like that. But anyway, it was just a psychology of and sort of understanding your audience. I knew that if we delivered the match that I had in my head, that it would make both me and Davey, and that's pretty much what happened.
And on TV, in the build-up to the match, they interviewed, you know, your mom and dad, Stu and Helen, they interviewed Diana, and they really played up the idea that, you know, he's your brother-in-law, but that had never been mentioned on TV before, that you guys were family. Did you have a say in that being the storyline? Did Vince talk to you about it? What do you remember?
Well, actually, guys like Jesse Ventura, Gorilla Monsoon, and Bobby Heenan, and some of those early announcers from those days, Vince too, often talked about my dad, the Dungeon. You know, Gorilla Monsoon's the one that called me the Excellence of Execution on TV one time, and that stuck. And so there was a lot of sort of little I don't know, clues or whatever, like, about my family, like little. People started learning more about my dad and my dad's history, and the fact that I came from a family of 12, which is kind of strange. It just made for a better story than one they could make up, and in those days, they preferred to make them up, and it was like, no, don't make one up. This is a real story. I'm fighting my brother-in-law, and let's make a story out of it. And they kind of went with it, and that was probably the start of sort of pulling that curtain back and showing that me and my sister Diana were family, and that Bulldog was family, and Jim Neidhart was family, and Dynamite Kid was basically married to my wife then. He's married to my wife's sister. So I had a lot of family that it was interesting drama for fans to sort of understand. And a lot of fans knew it, and a lot of fans didn't, but when the more they sort of dug deeper into the family history and the wrestling story behind the family, it led credibility to the match with Davey. So they kind of brought that all into it. And I know my mom did some pretty bad acting promoting that match. But my dad was pretty good. And a lot of my brothers and different people in the family got behind it. And, you know, it was fun to work the truth into the storyline. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm glad, I thought it helped.
And then the other thing, like, when you think about it, you and Davey Boy never faced off before SummerSlam. There was no angle on TV of you two fighting. The first time we saw you guys face off was at SummerSlam. How do you feel about, because that's a bold move for that to be the main event of a SummerSlam, and the two guys have never faced off at that point.
Well, you know, the kind of the truth of it is that Hulk Hogan, who was the biggest star in the world, and at the time, maybe in anything, like, he was such a huge phenomenon, He hated to travel. He didn't like going to England. He didn't like traveling, and he didn't want to go to England. So he rarely went. I don't remember Hulk being there very often. But guys like me were going over there all the time for tours. And so that opened the door. When Hulk wasn't there, it allowed guys like me to get some of that shine, you know, and get fans to go, okay, well, I like him too. And it was sort of a changing of the guard in wrestling at that time. If you go back to Wembley, before Wembley, you know, I fought Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8. And that was, to me, was one of my first real wrestling classics was the match with Roddy. The other one would have been with Perfect. And I had a few others that were, you know, with Ricky Steamboat and Ted DiBiase and different guys where I really got to show my best stuff. But I knew that the match that we were going to have was going to kick the door in and that wrestling was changing. People were getting tired of the cartoon characters, and they were getting tired of the steroided up wrestlers getting all the credit. And it wasn't all about how big your arms were. It was sometimes fans started liking the wrestling. Guys like Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect were making people wrestling fans again, and they liked the wrestling part of it. And I can remember lots of times wrestling Kurt Hennig, and Hulk Hogan would be on last, and the biggest match on the card was definitely me and Kurt. And so I started getting some credit finally, and they started slowly giving me a little rise in the company at that time. But I think that the fans were getting sick of the bodybuilders, guys like Hogan and Warrior, and I won't go on and on and name all these guys, but they were doing there was a lot of slow, ponderous wrestlers that were big and bulky that really weren't great wrestlers necessarily, but they were great characters. But I think people started to really love the wrestling. I think people loved my wrestling, or the way, you know, loved the contrast of reality from the other matches.
And, you know, you were part of WrestleMania 3, and you were there at the Pontiac Silverdome, and then 5 years later, you get to Wembley the day of the show. You've had all these issues with Davey trying to get everything together. What do you remember about when you got to Wembley and you see that stadium set up and ready?
Well, we've been there the whole day Saturday, like the whole day. We were at the building. We were all worried it was going to rain. That was the big fear. Everyone was crossing their fingers and biting their lip and praying that it didn't rain, because it was raining, I think, when we got there. And it was like, oh, my God, what if it rains? It'll ruin everything. I didn't want to wrestle in the rain. And anyway, I think for me, that was the things I remember. I remember flying into England and going to my hotel in downtown London somewhere, but I remember there was fans on the street. There were so many fans on the street all night chanting Hitman, Hitman, H, you know, they'd spell my name out like cheerleaders, H-I-T-M-A-N, and then they'd cheer and yell it all the way up from the street. And I could hear it all night. They cheered till at least 4 in the morning. And then they would cheer Bulldog's name, Bulldog, B-U-L-L-D-O-G. And anyway, they did it all night. And I could sort of tell by that, it's like, this is going to be fantastic tomorrow. I knew maybe more than anybody else that this match, because I had the match. I had every single step in my head. Every single day I'd lie down when I was, because you, in wrestlers, a lot of times we lie down in tanning beds. And I remember every time I'd lay in a tanning bed, I'd sit there and I'd start the match. I'd tie up with Davey and it would start right there, and I'd run the whole match through my head. And I remember every time I'd lie in the tanning bed and run the whole match through my head, and it's going to be the greatest match of all time. To me, the greatest match of all time up to that point was Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat. And amongst the professionals in the industry, most guys at that time would have said that was the best match ever, best wrestling match. Two guys working and telling a really great story, Macho Man, Steamboat, best ever. And so that was, to me, that was the mark to top. And I wanted to deliver a better match than that. And I like to think I did. And I was pretty excited about it. But things I remember about that, I remember being, we had to do a meet and greet that day in London at the Wembley. And they brought me up to some media room at the Wembley Stadium, which is huge. It took me about an hour to get up to the top of it just to meet some contest winners that had been radio shows and stuff like that had won tickets and whatever. And there was this whole room full of fans, and every one of them had a Bulldog shirt on. And there was one little kid that had a Hitman shirt on. And I remember it's like, hey, little buddy. And I remember I got with him, and he said, can you give me your glasses tonight? And because I had a lot of kids ask me if I would give them my glasses. And I'm like, it's a lot harder than you think. When you're in the ring, you see 20,000 or 30,000 or 100,000 people out there. You can't find one little kid anywhere. Even if they tell you where they are, it's like you can't even see them. That's like such a blur of people that... So I didn't want to hurt his feelings and tell him that I said, well, if I see you, I'll give them to you. And anyway, that's just a funny little tidbit, because when I went out to the ring for the match, when I dropped out on the floor to give somebody my sunglasses, I didn't even look. I just dropped out on the floor and I walked right up to that kid and put the glasses on his head. In a way, I didn't even see him until I walked up to him. I go, like a little miracle. Like, oh, wow, I don't know how I found this guy in front of 90,000 people, but here he is, And so, anyway, so that was the start of it. And, you can feel, if you ever watch the match back, when you feel that electricity or that energy when I walk out and when Davey walks out, and then there's this moment where you can just sense everybody's like, who's going to win this one? Nobody really knew. And I remember that's the beauty. That's when you have that kind of situation. If you're a great wrestler, you can deliver the great wrestling matches, because they will just there. You got everyone riveted to your storyline, and I knew it, and I knew it was going to be great. And Davey was literally trembling almost all right from the start. He was really nervous, and it was a pretty complicated match. But I slowed him down. I got him to take it easy, like to save his energy, And as we paced the match. I'll say this much, Davey body slamming me would have been like, slamming a like a small kid or something, Whereas me picking up Davey was like picking up a full refrigerator. He went up heavy for everything, like every suplex or body slam, it was like picking up somebody dead weight, because Davey was just not there that day. But, at the same time, Davey would pick me up and I'd throw my, like, boost myself up for him, and he'd pick me up and press slam me and throw me on the ring. I was doing all that to conserve his strength and his energy so that we could do the whole match the way I planned it, because I didn't want Davey to run out of gas. Like, you can't run out of gas, Davey. This is your match, and this is all for you. You can't drop the ball. You got to, you're going to screw everything up for everybody, including Vince, but even me, because I'm one that suggested you. And Davey, I don't mean any of this is a put down on Davey, because Davey sucked it up, and I mean he didn't have the wind in the the gas in the tank, and there was no way he was going to, but he was determined not to let me down, and he gave everything he had every step of the way to deliver the match that I planned out for him. And I'm sound like I'm being hard on Davey, but I'm not. I love Davey, and I was always, if he was right here, I'd be saying the same things. I wanted to do this match for him. It was something I brought right to his doorstep, and it meant a lot to me to help him like that. And I just know that every step of the way through that match, there's not very often you can see Bret Hart talking in my matches. I was never a guy that, I was always protecting the business and always trying my best to always make wrestling look legit or real as possible. I didn't want to, like when you're watching Robert De Niro, you don't see him going like, you can't forget your moves and stuff like that. And I don't like to talk in the ring. And if I do talk in the ring, it's one or two words and it's quick and you don't see it. And I hate when I watch old matches back, even my own, I don't like being caught talking. To me, that's a X, like that's a mark against you when you get caught talking in the ring. And there's so many great wrestlers that talk in the ring all the time, and I'm like, that's not a very good wrestler, that when you get caught talking in the ring. But in saying all that, the match with Davey and Wembley, you can see lots of times in that match where I'm talking in the match because I didn't have any choice. I had to do the thinking for both of us. And a lot of times I'd have Davey in a rear chin lock, and he'd be like breathing really hard, and he's like, I'm fucked. I can't do it. I can't do it. And it's like, Davey, you got to do it. You know, and I got to keep pumping him up and getting him, keeping him motivated. And like, anyway, it was a beautiful thing in the end because Davey pulled it all together. You know, there was really only a couple spots in the matches that didn't come off. There's so many moments in that match where when I watch it, I go, it's one of the most realistic matches, I think. It really seems quite physical and real. And, you know, there was different parts in the match. I remember, I think I gave Davey a running knee and hit him in the gut in the match, and he knocked all the wind out of himself, which doesn't help when you're sucking wind anyway. But, you know, same thing. He still kept going. Davey was a fighter that day, and I've always been really proud of him. I know it sometimes sounds, people think that I'm putting him down, but he pulled a 10-star match out of a, you know, for a guy that was really a shattered mess before he walked out. He did a good job, and I always appreciate that about Davey. But there was a couple of times Davey forgot stuff in the match. I remember there's one part I had a sleeper hold on him. And I told Davey, I said, he's supposed to put him on his back like a piggyback, and he's supposed to run backwards and back me into the corner. And then he shakes me off kind of thing, and then I'm supposed to be hurt, which I was, because Davey dropped my neck right on the rope, so it knocked me out cold. And I remember I had to jump back on his back and put him in the sleeper hold again. And then Davey was supposed to slowly sink down to one knee and start to, you know, flounder a little bit. And kind of, we do that slow crawl to the ropes. But it was me with the sleeper on the whole time. And I remember telling Davey, I said, go slow, just go slow. And Davey just walked over, like crawled over, like speed crawled. If you ever watch it, he just speed crawls right to the rope. And I'm like, you piss me off now, Davey. So if you ever watched that, I knew he's, like I say, Davey was a bit frantic sometimes in there. But if you ever watched that, I gave Davey this absolutely beautiful kick right in the face. I mean, it was perfect. I kicked him as hard as I could, right on the face, right on the nose, and just kicked the tip of his nose as hard as I could. And I didn't break his nose, close though. No blood or anything like that, but it was like a slap, like listen up, idiot. You know, it was kind of what it was. It was like, Davey, you gotta listen to me. And you know, so then he would get back on focus. But that was really what that was. There's also different things. I remember I was getting ready to jump over the top rope, and Davey was supposed to catch me. And of course, as I'm jumping over the top ropes, Davey bent down to tie his shoelaces or something, and I went sailing over top of him. But I managed to put a backwards headlock on him in the midair and jerked him backwards over, which would look great. It was like, I remember thinking Dave Meltzer gave it some kind of special space needle move from Japan, and I'm thinking, no, it was just a screwed up high spot. You know, it wasn't a space needle fly out or whatever Dave called it. But anyway, there was a lot of little moments in the match that like that.
Well, one other thing I wanted to bring up was Joey Morella was the referee for the match, and you've always said he was your favorite referee. Why was that?
Joey was the best referee in the world, period. I've never seen a referee ever as good as Joey. He was smart, really knew where to be, knew what his part was. Like when, you know, I love a lot of the referees. They had some great referees over the years. Kyoto was a good referee. Both the Hebners were good referee, but Earl used to hate getting knocked down. Like if you had to do a spot where Earl had to get knocked down, Earl was one of those guys that got knocked down so many times that he got scared of getting hit. And so you have to go have a setup in the match where you got to drop down and the wrestler's going to run into Earl and knock him down. Earl would just move out of the way. It's like, Earl, you're supposed to get knocked down. It's like, you moved out of the way. It's like, and then you keep having to figure out spots for the next 5 minutes, trying to figure out ways to knock the referee down for real. And, you know, that's just kind of, you know, and of course, Earl would move again and move again and move again. But anyway, Joey was one of those guys that was never made a mistake in the ring. He was always focused and clear. He knew exactly what was going on, and he knew from talking to me that Davey was not all there. Davey was going to need a lot of help in this match. And I was, you know, when we went in the ring, we didn't know how much time we had. I had at least a 35, 40-minute match in my head. I remember going, this is at least 40 minutes long, if I'm thinking this out right. And they're going, well, we're not sure. You might have 30 minutes airtime left. And I'm thinking, 30 minutes airtime, that means they missed the ending. And it'll stink. That'll stink. I can't do that. So we had it where the referee would tell us, like, we had basically like 30 seconds notice that you got to go home right now because the show, we're going off the air in 30 seconds. And I was so scared of that happening. Not scared, but, you know, worried that that was going to happen, that whole match is like a speed walk. We do every move as fast as we can. We go into the next move and the next move and the next move, and it's just a very thrilling pace that we both, which is why I appreciate how Davey pulled it all together that day. It was not an easy match to have, and it wasn't an easy pace to have, and Davey did rise to the occasion. And, you know, I just know that we got it all in, and I didn't have to edit anything out of the match. I was determined not to edit anything out. I wanted every single move, every single punch, every single, you know, I reach up to grab his hair or whatever it is. Every single action in that match is plotted out and planned out and strategized as to why that move would be the perfect move to do right there. And if you ever watch that match, that's why I was going, it's the perfect match. And the only mistake in that whole match was when Bulldog picked me up for the big press slam and dropped me on the ropes, and he dropped me on the second rope. That was the only screw up in the whole match, other than a few stiff potatoes that Davey gave me, but or vice versa. But
you also mentioned in your book that Vince came up to you and said he didn't want to know the finish of the match, which is unheard of, really. Did that add more pressure to you, or did you take that as a compliment?
No, I knew. I tried to tell him because I was excited about it. This is the finish. This is going to be the best finish. And I remember telling him. And it's funny, with the finish, the sunset flip where Davey hooks my legs and falls down, it was such a beautiful move. And I had it done in a match where I wrestled an old wrestler in Canada. And he told me, he goes, this is the best move ever. Like, do this for the finish. And it was a babyface match, kind of like Wembley. And I did it to beat him. And I remember when he told me about it, I was like, it's kind of flat, like a sunset flip, and like right on the finish, it's not going to work. And he goes, trust me. And I went out and wrestled him that night, and I won in Calgary, the North American title from a guy named Leo Burke. That was his finish. And I just remember going, that is a great finish. It's such a good finish, and no one sees it coming. It happens so fast, and there's no way out of it. Like, once Davey pinned me to the mat, there's nothing anybody could do. There's no way to get out of it or kick out of it, or, you know, you're pinned, and that's the end of it. And I knew that would be the beautiful ending, no one would see it coming. And so I knew that it was going to be a great finish. And I just remember when I tried to explain it to Vince, because I wanted him to hear what my great idea was, and he was like, don't tell me. I just want to watch it. And that was a big compliment to me. And I remember going, okay, well, you're going to be happy when you watch it, because it's going to be really good. And it's funny, when I used to tag up with Jim Neidhart and the Hart Foundation, I can remember specifically one night with the Killer Bees, where we were wrestling them, and it was Brian Blair, and I said, I have this move, because the Killer Bees were going to beat the Hart Foundation, and I said, I have an idea that I did in Calgary, and I said, go for a sunset flip, and you hook my legs, and you've collapsed down on top of me, and you pin me. And I remember Brian was like, it's kind of flat, and I go, it's not, it's a great move, and he didn't want to do it. And I remember then, that day, that was probably about 1986, I remember saying to myself, it's like, Don't give somebody your great ideas. Take those ideas and put them in your pocket and keep them for yourself, which I recommend to any wrestler that comes up with a great idea. Put it in your pocket and don't tell anybody, because there's thieves everywhere that will steal your ideas. And, you know, that's just the way the business goes. But the finish, you know, I take a lot of pride in that finish. I don't know that it'll always probably be considered the Bret Hart finish at Wembley, but it was just the perfect move at the perfect time. And I think I love that about a lot of my matches. When I look back today, when I reflect, I like the pulling the match out of nowhere. And I don't like fans to. One of the things and maybe you fans feel the same way, but I hate to know what's going to happen before it happens. Like, when I can predict, like, oh, he's going to move, and then he moves, I'm like, that's crap. You know, like, when you can predict what's going to happen all the time, it's not very interesting. I think that's what I loved about my matches. I tried as much as possible to throw as many swerves in the match, like, where you think this is going to happen, but, oh, that something else happened, and that's the key to having a great wrestling match, is to keep constantly changing your directions.
And so, you know, you've talked about all the work that goes into the match, everything that you've had to do to get it there. When that finish happens and the bell rings and 80,000 people go crazy for the finish, what do you remember feeling? Was it relief that you'd been able to see all your plans through? What was the feeling like when that bell rang?
I was just so glad that the bell didn't ring earlier. Like, I was like, we got it, we did it. And Davey did it, like, we did it, and it's done. And I was so proud of it. And, you know, one of the little things, again, this is all about my desire to tell a really good story. I guess, you know, I'll take the compliment of that. A lot of people like Vince have even said to me that I was the best storyteller in wrestling, because I tried to be a really good storyteller. And with Davey, I had told him, I said, Davey, I said, when you win, don't you leave the ring. And I said, I'm just going to sit on the ring and just be steaming mad, maybe even at myself. But I'm not going to get up, and I'm not going to leave the ring, but I'm just going to be pissed off, just sitting on my ass in the middle of the ring. I said, don't take your eyes off me. I want you to keep looking at me, just staring at me. And I want you to just keep looking at me and offering me your hand. Just keep offering me your hand. I won't shake it. I won't even look at you. I'll look up and I'll, like, being like, I'm too mad to shake your hand kind of thing. And I remember telling him, I said, Davey, if you do this right, it'll be the cherry on the cake. I bet we can make 82,000 people start crying in the building. They'll start crying when we actually shake hands. And I remember I went through it with Davey, and when I went into the ring and we did the finish and everything, I remember I kept looking at Davey, looking at him to have that eye contact where, like, he's looking at me and just holding his hand out. And he did it a couple of times, but then he would look up at the fans, and then he would look at Diana, and it's like, Davey, look at me. I'm the guy you got to look at. And I remember he wouldn't look at me, and I finally just got mad and walked over, and we hugged, and that was the end of it. But in hindsight, if you can just picture that match at the end of me and Davey looking at each other, and me, and then when I get up to leave the ring, like, I'm too pissed off to shake his hand, everybody be like, oh, you got to shake his hand, it was too beautiful a match. And, you know, and then I think about it, and then anyway, we eventually slowly come in and shake his hand. We could have made that whole 82,000 people just start bawling right there at Wembley Stadium. And I remember I tried so hard to be like, Davey, for God's sakes, just look me in the eye one time and lock eyes with me and let these people feel that emotion between us, and then we shake hands, it'll be unheralded, like, no one will ever top it. It'll be one of those beautiful memories that people will live for. And you know, that was one of the few things we missed that day, that whenever I watch Wembley back, I go, we could have been just a hair better. And you know, that's the storyteller in me.
And then you get backstage, and, you know, Ric Flair comes up to you, Macho Man, Shawn Michaels, everyone's praising the match.
No, that's not true. I come back to the dressing room, there's nobody there. Nobody. Everybody's got a bus back to the hotel. Like, there's like three guys in the dressing room, and they didn't even watch my match. Nobody watched it. Nobody knew. I had Vince McMahon come up and tell me it was the greatest match in the history of wrestling, and that he thanked me so much and told me I was, he told me I was the greatest athlete that he'd ever seen wrestle, which it was a nice compliment. But no, I never got any praise. In fact, I was hoping for some kind of feedback from Kurt, or, you know, I have a lot of buddies back there would say, hey, that was a great match, but I didn't. Nobody was there. I went back to the hotel, finally went down to the bar. Even at the hotel after I wrestled, I felt like somebody had maybe thrown me out of an airplane or something. I was so beat up. My body was so sore. Everything hurt. It felt like I'd been caned. And I still went down to the bar, and I remember asking guys, like, did you see my match? It's like, no, I missed it. No, we had to go. The bus was leaving. Nobody saw it. I called home. My wife told me that she took all my kids and went over to her friend's house, and they missed my match. Like, nobody watched. I remember just kind of being really bummed out. Like, nobody saw it. And nobody, like, I remember talking to guys in the bar, and it was just like nothing. Like, they didn't even care. Nobody saw it. I know that if they saw it, they would come up and tell me I loved your match or something, but nobody saw it. So then we flew from England to Washington, D.C. for the Monday tapings. I'm not sure if they were Monday Night Raw yet, but we had the TV tapings in Washington. And that's when I was in my room watching it. I had a fan or a friend of mine had taped it and gave me the videotape and put a video machine in my room. And so I got to sit and watch it for the first time. I was watching it in my room, and I was pretty pleased with how the camera work and everything went, and how it looked, and how solid it was, and it was just a beautiful story. And then I remember I had a knock on my door, and the first two guys that came to my door were Rick and Randy Savage, and they had been watching the whole pay-per-view on the pay-per-view in the hotel room, because you could watch it over again in the hotel room, and they got so jacked up and excited about my match that they came to my room and pounded on my door. And I remember Rick looking at me and goes, I want to shake your hand. And Randy, too. Randy shook my hand and said, the greatest match I've ever seen. And Rick said the same thing to me. And then about 15 minutes after they left, Shawn Michaels came, knocked on my door, and he goes, unbelievable. He was like, unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Best ever. And those are the three guys that I remember really. But within a day or two of that, everybody from Vince McMahon to everybody came up and was like, you did it. That's the best match ever. And, you know, I don't know that it was the best match ever. Everybody's got their favorites. But I think it was the greatest match I ever had up to that time anyway.
Because, I mean, a lot of people call you Mr. SummerSlam for all your great SummerSlam matches, and even BT Sports said that this match was the greatest match in SummerSlam history. Where does this match rank for you in your favorites?
Well, that's a hard one, because I like to think that telling a wrestling match, like, my favorite matches are like my favorite songs. Like, when you put a whole match together, like maybe the way Paul McCartney wrote a song for the Beatles or something, it's like that's his favorite song. I have so many favorite matches that I had with so many different wrestlers, but I would say my favorite match that I ever had was, like, just for everything that all went into it, and the timing and the emotion and the storytelling, I think my WrestleMania 13 match with Steve Austin was the best match I ever had. But I'd say maybe just a hair below that would be the Iron Man match with Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels was a fantastic, great wrestler and an incredible athlete, and I just know that the Iron Man match, I don't know that anybody will ever top that. If they do, I'd like to see it. That was the hardest match I ever had was the Iron Man match, and I'd say the Steve Austin one was actually one of my easiest matches, which is why I love it so much, because I remember when I got back to the dressing room, I was feeling pretty good. I almost could have gone out and wrestled again. But and that was just two guys. That's two professional wrestlers two of the best professional wrestlers working together to tell this incredible story. And, you know, when you come back to the dressing room and no animals are harmed in the making of this movie kind of thing, it's like, you know, when you're not injured or hurt or you didn't have to kill yourself or fall through a table or something stupid, you know, when you can just go out there and really tell a story with your bodies, and it doesn't have to be props or chairs or chains or, you know, anything else. And, you know, that's what I loved about the match with Steve and with Sean. They're both just great stories. But I would put the Bulldog Wembley match could easily be in front of those or right after that. I would put those are my three favorites of all time, those three matches. And I have a few others that are like four, five, six, but they're all in the same group. I always loved my match with my brother Owen. That would have been four. I absolutely loved my match with Undertaker, SummerSlam, when I won the title. Masterpiece. When I watch it back, I go, I wouldn't change one move. I wouldn't change one single flick of the eye or anything. It's like everything is perfect. And that's what I loved about Undertaker. He was just an absolute total pro in there. But, you know, there was quite a few other great matches that I had. But Kevin Nash, Survivor Series, would be another one that I was... Just a beautiful story and a great match. And anyway, those are the ones that come off the top of my head.
You know, it's funny because you do the SummerSlam match, and by November, Davey Boy's gone. And by that point, you're the WWF champion. How much of this Wembley match that you put together do you think made Vince decide to put the WWF title on you 2 months later?
I think it was... I mean, I hate to say that I planned it because I know I didn't. But, I mean, I was like, it's like he, you know, the fact that, you know, that I went to Vince and offered to drop the title to Sean or Davey Boy prematurely because I didn't know that I was losing. It's not like they came in and said, you know, you're losing the title. It was like I was one of the only guys I know of that ever went in and said, I have an idea, and the idea is not going to help me, but it's going to help somebody else. And that's pretty rare in wrestling. But I knew. I just had this sense about it that my timing... I know at that time, I don't know that I was the biggest star in Canada. And I don't know that I was the biggest star here in the United States. I was an up-and-comer, but I don't... You know, guys like Hogan and Warrior and Macho Man were the big wheels in those days. But I know in England and in Germany and a lot of the other markets like India and... I was the guy for some reason. People loved the way I wrestled, and they weren't Hulk Hogan guys. They were Bret Hart guys, and I could sense a shift coming in the business. That was, if you told somebody that at the time in a car riding to the town or something, they'd think you were nuts. Like, you know, like, this guy's so full of himself. He thinks, you know. But, you know, I really did have a hunch that things were changing and that I was in a good place at the right time, and this was a chance for me to push and get the break that maybe would open a big door for me, and that's all it happened. I knew. It's kind of funny, but when I got told I was winning the title, I was in Saskatoon. I remember when Vince McMahon called me in the room, and they sat me on a floor. I thought they were going to find me, or I was in trouble. They told me the night before, they said, you got to get on the plane tomorrow morning, because I was in my hometown, and I was wrestling in a town about 80 miles out of Calgary called Red Deer. And they came up to me and said, Vince wants to see you first thing in the morning, 8 o'clock. I'm like, 8 o'clock in the morning? I got to get up at 6 to get there. And he's like, he goes, you're booked for you land at 8, and whatever it was. I just was like, you're so tired for a TV taping when you got to get up at 6 in the morning and then you got to be at the building all day and then you got to wrestle that night. So I wasn't too happy about going. I remember trying to get out of it. And he goes, you have to go. And Vince wants to see you as soon as you get there. Don't miss your flight. And he made me think that I was in trouble when, in fact, it's like they're going to tell me this big news that they're going to put the belt on me. But so I remember I got to the building and... I guess Rick was in Vince's office getting the news that they were going to drop the belt that night. And I just remember watching Vince and Rick. Rick exited out of Vince's office. There's a big long hallway. And Vince had a little room somewhere in about the middle of the hallway. And I saw Rick get out, and Rick made a right turn and never even saw me. I was at the other end of the hall. He just made a right turn and walked down the hall. And I was like, Ric Flair's meeting Vince. Like, you know, I didn't connect that either. And then Vince waves at me and gives me the fingers to come down. I come down and sits me down, and I'm like, what's up? Like, what's going on? And he goes, you know, we've tried to do a lot of things with you in the territory, you know, since you've come here. He goes, didn't we put the tag belts on you? I go, yeah, we put the tag belts on you. And then he goes, then we put the Intercontinental on you. And I go, yeah, you put the Intercontinental on me. And he goes, so we've kind of done everything that we can do with you. So anyway, he started talking like he was going to fire me. And I remember sitting there because I knew my dad. I was actually in Saskatoon that day. It was the advertised match that my dad, I think, was handcuffed to Jerry Lawler in the corner or something like that. I can't remember what the storyline was, but my dad was being flown out to Saskatoon to be handcuffed to somebody in my corner. And I thought, as he was getting, I remember it's like, sounds like he's going to fire me. Like, it's like, so we've kind of done everything we can think of with you. So, you know, it was, I could sense as like, I remember looking at him and going, you son of a bitch, you're going to fire me right now? And my dad's flying in to be handcuffed to, you know, I remember I was like, I just sat there because, you know, the truth is that's exactly how they are. They are that cold blooded, and that's how Vince and all of them are. It's all business, and they don't give a shit whether you feel bad or not. And I remember I could feel my blood raising, and I was like, I remember going, just keep your cool, because when he fires you, just don't sell it, you know. And I really thought he was going to fire me. And then suddenly he goes, so that's why we're going to put the belt on you tonight, the big one. And I was like, I didn't even sell it. I just looked at him and said, okay. And he goes, and he looks at me like I'm kind of weird, strange. And he goes, you're the first guy that never reacted. Everybody I've ever told that to, when I told them that they were going to win the belt, they usually jumped around the room, or they were so excited and like jubilant. But for me, it was like, you pulled the rug out from underneath me for so many years. Like, every time you promise me something, it never happens. And you tell me at 8 o'clock in the morning in Saskatoon that I'm winning the world title tonight. It's like, I don't see it. I don't believe it till it happens. And when I see it happen, then I'll be happy. Then I'll jump around my room. But that's how it was. I didn't believe till I won it that I was going to win it. And once I won it, I was never going to give it up. Even if I lost it.
My last question about Davey Boy is, years later, in 1995, you guys main event an In Your House pay-per-view in December of 95. This time, Davey Boy's a heel, you're the babyface. When you guys were going into that, and, you know, it's such a different match, there's all the blood in it, were you guys going into it thinking, we need to make this completely different from the SummerSlam match?
Well, you know, I love my match with Davey at Wembley so much, and it was such a historical match. Like, people, you know, 30 years later still remember it, you know, with a lot of emotion and stuff. And what was your question?
You guys had the match In Your House in December of 95.
So the In Your House match, when they... I got the title from Kevin Nash, Diesel, and it's like right away out of the know, Javy had just turned heel, I think, right? And my sister Diana was, I don't know what she was doing, trying to become a heel or trying to get into the storyline of somehow, which I didn't like. I didn't want that. I wasn't keen on that idea so much. But with Davey, it was... I remember going, there's so much pressure on us to have as good a match as what we had at Wembley. And then I'm like trying to think about it, and I'm like, how can I have this match with Davey? Because Davey's a heel now, and I'm the babyface, whereas in England, it worked so well because I could be a babyface heel. Like, I could still be I could blur the line between a heel and a babyface. I could cheat all the way through the match with Davey, as long as I put him over at the end of it, they'd still love me in England. And I knew that. And that's exactly what happened. But in with Davey in as a heel going into that In Your House pay-per-view, this is just my opinion, but Davey was not a very good heel. He just didn't look like a heel. Kind of like John Cena. I don't think John Cena could have ever been a heel. And you can argue maybe that he could have been a great villain in wrestling. I don't see it. Davey was exactly the same. Babyface forever. Just didn't have the look of being a heel. Didn't talk like a heel. And his wrestling was he did headlocks and press slams and power slams and body slams and strongman stuff. But he didn't really cheat ever, even as a bad guy. Davey was always like a lousy bad guy. He never made pull your hair, and that's about all he did. You know, it's like to be a good bad guy, you got to cheat and be a total asshole out there. And Davey just wasn't in his nature, wasn't in his sort of wrestling character, wasn't a very good villain. So in wrestling, the reality of wrestling is that the bad guy or the heel controls the tempo of the match. I mean, you can't be a good babyface unless you have a fantastic heel. Like, if you have a heel that can, you know, make you mad and get the fans mad, then you can have a great match. But, you know, with Davey, I remember kind of struggling about it and thinking, like, you know, we could do lots of moves and lots of stuff, but it's headlocks and body slams and head scissors and stuff. It's not a heel match. And I remember it's like realizing going into the match with Davey that this was going to be a problem because Davey was not a very good heel, and we're not going to be able to tell a very good story. And I really struggled with it and struggled, and basically it was I drew a blank for days and days and days, and it's like I'm trying to think. I had to give you an idea, the In Your House match with Davey. I think there's about 10 or 15 minutes just before the blood comes. That would have been the match because that's all I had. Like, I pieced together a bunch of little moves, and we had about 10, 12 minutes worth of mostly babyface wrestling. And, you know, they tried to do things. My sister Diana was out there, but she wasn't a heel either. And I just know that I was driving to the building in Hershey Park, Pennsylvania, where the pay-per-view was taking place, and I remember thinking, like, actually stressing out and going, this match is going to stink. It's going to be one of the worst matches of my career. And it's going to be a real mark against me because I couldn't deliver with Davey. And we delivered such a great match at Wembley. And we are just not going to deliver today. And it's going to be a stink out. And I remember feeling almost like it's hopeless. There's nothing I can do to make this match better. And then I saw a pharmacy as we were driving to the Hershey Park Arena. And I remember thinking, blood, razor blades, old school. But I just remember thinking, blood would totally change this whole match. Suddenly would make it very interesting. And so I pulled into the drugstore and bought some necessary tools to bring blood in the match. And I got to the building and I told Davey, I said, this is what we're doing. And I started telling Davey the match. And I was just the only ones that knew what the blood were me and Davey. Not even the referee knew, not even Jim Cornette, who was managing Davey with a tennis racket. He didn't know about the blood. If you ever watch that match, when Jim Cornette sees all the blood everywhere, he's like about ready to have a heart attack. You know, he couldn't believe it. And at that time, we weren't allowed to have blood in the matches, nor with the Steve Austin. We weren't allowed to have blood in matches then either. But I remember going, we need the blood in this match because this match is nothing without it. And we did the whole first part of the match, which would have been the match, period. And it is until the blood comes that suddenly the match just comes to life. And then the rest of it is all stuff that we did after because the blood changed the whole tempo of the match. And that's why I love that match almost as much as the one I had at Wembley, because it's just such a beautiful story and it's so carefully done. And there's a lot of moves in there that nobody's ever done, I've never done before. I used to always try to do in almost every one of my big matches, I always try to do one move or one spot or one sequence of moves that I've never done ever before, where someone could go, I've never seen that before. And you know, if you watch a lot of my matches back, there's little things in there that are first time things that really went well, and I always was proud of them for creating them. But in the match with Davey at the In Your House, when I was climbing in the ring, and I think Davey was on the floor, and I was covered in blood, and I just climbed up the ropes and sprung backwards and dropped down on top of him, and Davey caught me in the air and then running power slammed me on the cement or on the padded floor, and then he pulled the cement back and or the pad from the floor so that I'd be on the cement and all that. But it was just brilliant stuff. I mean, that I don't think anybody's ever done before, and I don't know that anybody's ever done it since, but it was all stuff that was fresh, like brand new stuff. Anyone watching, any wrestler anywhere would go, I've never seen that before. And that's what I like to pride myself on, is doing stuff that nobody ever seen before or nobody expected it to happen, you know. And sometimes you can cherry pick little things from wrestling matches you've seen over your lifetime and pull something that hasn't been seen and done for many, many years and do it in a match where it's like, wow, that was really good. And then, you know, I was lucky enough, being the son of a wrestler and a wrestling promotion, and my dad was put on some of the great wrestlers. Like, every world champion worked in Calgary, from Luthez to Gene Kaniski to Dory Funk to Bruno Sammartino. Everybody worked there. It was a good place. It was a good wrestling place to go because people love wrestling in Calgary. They liked a good hard wrestling match, and that's what they got there. But I think being a guy that grew up in the wrestling business, a kid, and a guy that watched wrestling all my life, I really got to understand wrestling and the psychology. Whether I didn't learn algebra in school or anything. I was always lousy at math, but I knew my wrestling when I was 7 years old. I probably knew more about wrestling than some wrestlers know today. I'm almost guaranteed that I know more about wrestling than, I think. And I'll just say this, is that the greatest wrestlers we're always wrestling fans first. Like, I was a real fan. Like, I used to get pretty excited just before the matches on Friday. It was every Friday night in my hometown. But I got out of school on Friday. I transformed into a completely different person going to the wrestling matches. I loved wrestling. I loved watching each match and grading different guys. And I want to see this guy versus that guy. And I want to see the two masked guys wrestle, and I want to see which one loses his mask. And you know, I was a real fan. I loved wrestling. And a lot of times when I think about my wrestling matches, I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm going, what do I want to see Bret Hart and Steve Austin do? And that's how I look at my wrestling matches. Like, this is what I think I would like to see. If I was a fan, I'd like to see Bret Hart and Steve Austin start out from the very beginning. They start fighting. And they go on the floor, and then you start to piece the whole movie together. And that's why I think I had a bit of an edge over a lot of the guys in the business. I had a great mind for wrestling all my life.
Listen, we have to wrap up there, unfortunately, but I'm sure you all agree it was amazing to hear Bret Hart tell us the story of SummerSlam 92.
Thank you. I also just want to say, just in closing, that I always loved coming to Nashville. I always had some really great matches here right from the very start. I remember when WWE first came to Nashville and they ran their first show here. I believe I was on the very first show they ever ran here. And I remember I was excited about coming here because I knew this was a wrestling territory, or there was they had a wrestling history here in Nashville. But for me, I always loved Nashville. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Calgary. The Stampede wrestling territory was very comparable to what Nashville and Memphis were doing for wrestling. A lot of the same wrestlers that came from Memphis and Nashville all ended up in Calgary and vice versa. But I always just wanted everyone to know that I used to love coming here to Nashville. And when the opportunity came to come down here, it was important for me to come back because I thought the fans were such great fans here. And I it means a lot for me to be here, and I appreciate everyone coming out. And it's just an honor for me to be back in Nashville with so many great wrestling fans and great wrestlers that are here for all the great memories. And I just want to thank everyone for all those years of great wrestling. Thank you. Thanks for listening to me. Sorry if I talk too long, but I get that from my dad, so nothing I can do about it.
Listen, I want to thank all of you for coming here in Nashville. Thank you to everyone watching the fight. One more time, Bret the Hitman Hart!
What an incredible day of stage shows we had here, StarCast 5. John, this has been unbelievable. Bret Hart was just standing right here next to me.
Bret Hart was there next to you, and FTR was in the crowd watching
him. I'm just going to go talk to him. You know what? I got to finish this up. Yeah, John Alba, Josh Chernoff, it has been our pleasure to be with you today. If you missed any of this, go right now, fight.tv, get it on demand, watch all of these great stage shows. I mean, what was your favorite of the day, if you had to choose one?
I just think the sight of seeing all the horsemen together on that stage is something that's, quite frankly, never going to be replicated. So it was a you had to be here moment, or you had to watch it on Fight Online at home, because without that, those are the events that make StarCast special. But the beauty is, Josh Chernoff, we are not done, because tomorrow we're running it back, brother. 9 a.m.
We are not done, not by a long shot, as they say, because 9 a.m. we are going to kick things off with Foley is Pod.
I cannot wait for that. Conrad Thompson and Mick Foley are going to be rolling some thunder here on
the panel
section.
Two people I could listen to forever.
No doubt about that. Then we got Saraya, the former Paige in WWE. She's going to be making her long-form debut here right at StarCast. And after that, a new podcast as well. Click this.
Yeah.
Kevin Nash.
Kevin
Sean
Nash.
Oliver. Followed by What's Next with Johnny Gargano and Kenny McIntosh.
And then, is that it? There's another show.
There's
something
another
else
one.
Going on.
Wrapping things up here at StarCast, the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy.
Oh, yes!
Myself and Matt Hardy are going to be looking back
this
at that iconic WrestleMania 33 return with some special guests as well. A fun day here. More fun to come tomorrow.
Yes, and after all the stage shows tomorrow, don't forget, it is the last match of Ric Flair. Ric Flair's last match comes to you live on Fight. Go right now if you haven't already and order it. You are not going to be let down. Again, I'm Josh Chernoff. This is John Alba. Thank you so much for joining us today here at StarCast 5. We'll see you tomorrow.
Jim Crockett Promotions presents Ric Flair's Last Match. July 31st at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium. The weekend of StarCast 5, presented by CarShield, bringing wrestling companies together for one of the most unique cards ever assembled. Main evented by Ric Flair's Last Match. On sale right now at RicFlair'sLastMatch.com. And you can catch the show live streaming on pay-per-view and Fight TV for only $34.99. Ric Flair's Last Match. StarCast 5, presented by CarShield, who makes it easy and affordable to protect your car from expensive repairs. Go to CarShield.com/podcast to start your plan and lock in your pricing forever. That's CarShield.com/podcast. A deductible may apply.